Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With Seth Meyers behind the glass orchestrating all of this, Bob Pompiani and Jason Mackey in today. Joe Starkey off golfing, maybe enjoying a shower beer, who knows. We'll find out about if that's something that Matt Wenzel enjoys. He joins us right now on the Fan Hotline. He's been covering the Penguins on the beat since 2019. Knows a lot about hockey. Knows a lot about what's going on. Okay, so we'll start there. Matt, Jason brought up a shower beer, which I had never heard of. I normally, first of all, take showers in the morning. Beer is not going to be on my list of liquids.
Whoa. I never said I had a shower beer in the morning.
Yeah, but... Okay, well,
you have the shower beer in the evening.
I don't shower in the afternoon. I'm at work and I don't do that. So
well,
I guess
my change that.
Okay. Do you like shower beers or the post golf beer or the workout cutting the grass post beer, Matt?
I mean, I like beer at most times. Yeah, I would go with that. as for the shower beer, I have indulged in a number of shower beers over the years, but I'm kind of older now, so the only time I really do it is. Family vacation at the beach, you have the outdoor shower, you've been at the beach all day with the kids, I might bring an IPA into the shower.
Now that's
there
different.
The big old shower.
That's a different kind of shower.
I don't come home from like the arena and hop in the shower and have a beer or anything like that.
See that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll have a beer after the game, but not in the shower.
Not in the shower. Well, I was telling Pomp, I'll go for a run in the evening sometimes, and I'll come back, and then, you know, when I go to shower after a run, I'll crack a beer, and it's counterproductive because I'm just adding what I subtracted, but I don't care. I don't know. I guess I'm the weirdo that showers at night a lot of times.
Well, hey.
I mean, it's just multitasking.
Yes, exactly.
Well, if you're a hockey player, you shower after a game, and tonight, hopefully, it's a happy one of those because they take on Detroit in Detroit, a team that is, you know, I always thought they were going to be better than what they have produced here in the last several years, but they have some dynamic players. But, Matt, first of all, Jason brought this up when he said, that it became known that it was Nedeljkovic in goal tonight. Is that just because he's going against a team he used to play for, one of them? Or is this a sign that maybe he is going to get more time at the expense of Tristan Jarry?
I think it just comes down to this being a reward for how well Nedeljkovic played in the previous game. Mike Sullivan was asked about how he played, and he said he liked everything about his game, including how he played the puck. So, you know, I do think we've seen, like, a little bit not a regression, but, you know, Tristan has lost a little bit of steam here. Not that he's been playing awful, but they played him a lot. Ned has only made 3 starts to this point in December, I believe. So they gave him a start in the last game. He played well, so I think they're going back to him in this game. Just as kind of a reward for how well he played in the previous game.
Matt, I've been impressed by how much the Penguins, one, have been scoring on the power play, but just their special teams play overall, how many penalties they're killing. I think they're one of 4 teams that are top 10 in both, 1 of 4 or 5, but what's leading to the success on the power play, and how sustainable do you think the strong special teams play has been?
I mean, the PK, I think it's just, you know, it's there's always new personnel coming in and out. Mike Vellucci has been with the team for a long time now, and they play a particular way, and he's a good coach, and the guys are just kind of clicking in that regard. They've been getting good goaltending as well. I think the bigger story, as everyone would agree, is the power play. And really, it goes back to November 7th. The power play got off to a pretty good start, and then they were kind of falling back in old habits. And, you know, at that point, Mike Sullivan and David Quinn said, okay, we're splitting up these guys into 2 units. And you guys know, we've seen this gambit used in the past, and usually it lasts maybe 1 practice or 2 games or something like that. I mean, Sullivan even admitted the other night that, you know, he wasn't sure how long it was going to last, but I don't think anyone expected the 2 units and Sid and Gino to be split up for 6-7 weeks, but they've been playing great. You know, and I think a lot of it is they talk a lot about a 5-on-5 mentality. You hear it a ton, but basically they're saying stop screwing around and taking your time and looking for the perfect play and kind of probing on the perimeter. They just want guys to move and treat it like they're just out there 5-on-5 and playing with urgency and attacking the net. If you looked at the goal that Michael Bunting got last game, I mean, sure, it was a heck of a no-look pass, you know, below the goal line from Sidney Crosby, but, you know, they got into the zone, they won a battle, and they went right to work, went right to the net, and scored a goal. So I think that's really working for them, because as we've seen, and that's when they're most frustrating in previous years, is when they just kind of stand around and pass the puck on the perimeter and go nowhere.
Yeah, and the results are there now. I think they're number 4 or 5 in the NHL in power play, whereas last year was one of the reasons why they didn't make the playoffs. So whatever's working is working, so I would have maintained that they're going to continue to do that. I want to get an update on defensive pairings here, because I know Chris Letang got a little banged up. I'm not sure if he's a go tonight. And what is the latest on Marcus Pettersson, Matt?
Chris Letang is day-to-day. He wasn't at the morning skate just now in Detroit, so he's out tonight, but he's day-to-day, so we should see him back here soon. Marcus Pettersson is the old game-time decision, but we saw him out there with P.O. Joseph on a regular pair, so it looks like he's going to play tonight in Detroit. And then also Owen Pickering, who's been out with a concussion, he has been cleared for full contact, so you know, they've been banged up. They had to go to Nate Klerman, a guy who made his NHL debut at 26 in the previous game. It looks like they're getting healthy there, and it'll be curious to see what they do, because they're going to have a surplus. I mean, Pickering is one player who doesn't have to go on waivers. He's played so well, but he's a prospect. Might they send him back? What'll happen with P.O. Joseph? But, you know, we'll have to see if they can get through this game first without any more injuries, because, you know, that's what we've seen in the past. You kind of look ahead a little bit like, okay, what's going to happen? And then another guy gets hurt. But right now, things are looking good on the health front on the blue line.
Matt, you wrote about this a couple days ago. I think this was before Christmas. It was an excellent story. It was a very hockey story explaining kind of what they're doing differently, how they're preventing goals better. Can you maybe explain a little bit for anybody who didn't read that story, or what is the sort of hockey reason for their improved play? I mean, we talk about the, not that the power play and penalty kill aren't hockey reasons, but, you know, as far as play in the neutral zone, management of the puck, when defensemen are pinching, that sort of stuff, like what differences in play are you seeing leading to results?
Yeah, there's a few factors at play here that's kind of leading to the fact that they're not bleeding these, you know, quick goals and transition and stuff like that. The players have talked a lot about playing with a straight ahead style. And what that means is, they're just, you know, the defensemen get the puck in their own end, and they're just going right up the board, shipping it in the neutral zone, and then dumping it in. And that sounds boring, but basically the Penguins' approach has been, okay, like, we've been playing around with the puck too much, trying to do too much playmaking, holding the puck, and we're making mistakes. And they've basically said, okay, we're going to flip it. Like, we're just going to get the puck up the ice, 200 feet, chip it in, dump and chase, and we're going to force them to make mistakes. And they have changed up their forecheck a little bit, too. And it's leading to kind of more clutter in the neutral zone. And the Penguins have played really well in that area. So they've gone from being a team that was no team in the league through the first, I don't know, 20 games, 30 games, whatever it was giving up more goals and scoring chances within 5 seconds of a turnover. So they've flipped that, and now they're the ones who are kind of putting heat on the other team that caused them to make mistakes. So there's other factors in play. But I think a lot of it is you're just going with more of a dump and chase and not trying to be as much of playmaking. And they're just kind of playing a no-frill style, and it's working out for them well at 5-on-5.
I love it. And there's the whole narrative, Bob, about like Mike Sullivan doesn't change his style, which, you know, there's evidence. Changing style. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you got to do it at times. When it doesn't work, you got to figure something out. I'm just curious, Matt, because Jason and I were kicking this around about what – Kyle Dubas does moving forward. They're a team that's still on the fringe. They're out of the playoff picture, but they're close. They have, you know, they've played more games than some of the teams they're chasing, specifically Tampa. But I'm just curious, you know, how do you think he's going to go about the second half of the season if they're in contention, if they're close but out? And how much of this will impact what Tristan Jarry is all about? And if there's a way to, I don't know, make a deal that you can maybe get something in return, or have an eye for the future while you're still maintaining the presence, which I think is a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I for one am fascinated to see how he handles the trade deadline if the Penguins continue to play this way. Now, that's a big if. As we saw last year, like, even though the Penguins looked really bad in February, Cal Dubas let these guys go the whole way down to the trade deadline before pulling the plug and trading Jake Guentzel. And I think he's going to be just as patient unless, you know, something comes along his plate that he just cannot turn down. So, you know, I think he's going to wait and see how it plays out. But it is fascinating, because he's talked openly about the fact that, like, he's not concerned with just sneaking into the playoffs. And, you know, that's not what he's trying to build. He wants to build a sustained contender, what we saw from this team for 15 years. And he doesn't want to take any shortcuts in pursuit of that. So if this team is the eighth best team in the East and, you know, fighting for a playoff squad at the trade deadline, are they going to add? What are they going to do with Marcus Patterson if they don't feel like they're going to re-sign him? You know, like, could we see him trade Marcus for future assets, even though the Penguins are in position? I mean, that's a hard sell for guys like Sidney Crosby and Mike Sullivan, but, you know, I would say it's not out of the realm of possibilities. So there's a lot to be determined here in the next couple of weeks or couple of months. I mean, the Penguins have shown that this wasn't just kind of a fluky trend. Like, this might be more of a sustainable thing for the Penguins. So it will be fascinating to see how it plays out. I do think the goaltending situation is independent of that, because if Joel Blomqvist continues to play well in the minor leagues and they want to bring him up, I mean, that maybe he ends up being their best goalie and they move on from one of these two guys. I think it's probably more easy to move Nedeljkovic, but it's not like either of the two NHL goalies are playing great right now. So I would just say there's a lot of moving parts, but there's a lot to be determined here with how the Penguins proceed at the trade deadline.
All right, Matt, we appreciate the time. Happy New Year in Detroit, and we'll see you when you get back to Pittsburgh.
Same to you. I'm excited to spend the New Year's in the media room at Little Caesars Arena. Just perfect.
Well, they should do it up big, though. You know, I have some sort of variety of pizzas, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, only your best Little Caesars pizza.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt. Happy New Year.
All right, thanks, guys. Same to you.
All right, that's Matt Wentzel, the Post-Gazette, talking Penguin hockey. So I asked these guys to hang on, Dave, Jason, and they have, so I want to get to them because I promised to hang on. I'll get to you. So we have Dave in Bethel Park. Dave, thank you for waiting.
Oh, sure, Pomp. The patron saint of Point Park journalism and communications. It's an honor to talk to you, sir.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that, but I defer that to Mike DeCourcy, but go ahead.
Well, you know, when you're talking about the MVP thing, I wonder if football should do something like baseball does with the pitcher. You know, they had, like, the Cy Young Award and then the MVP. They should have, like, a quarterback thing, name it after, like, an old quarterback nobody saw play, like Bart Starr, Terry Bradshaw, and then have an MVP. They should do something like that.
Yeah, but then who would the – like, if you had a most valuable quarterback, what's the MVP going to be, a lineman, wide receiver, running back? I don't know.
Whoever.
Yeah.
Other than a quarterback.
I'm fine with the quarterback getting it a lot of years. I just think that you're going to set the NFL rushing record or come close. Like,
yeah.
Kind of grounds winning the MVP.
It's like Heisman. You know, how often do you see somebody other than a quarterback win it? And there are some guys, you know, Charles Woodson did a lot of things back in his day, which
Hugh Green,
same thing. Yeah, I mean, but you got to give them their fair shot. And Barkley deserves it, but I don't expect that he's going to win it. Although I think he deserves it, like I said.
He will get Offensive Player of the Year, I'd imagine, which is basically what they've created as a separate non-quarterback award by and large. Like Christian McCaffrey won last year.
Do you actually think he's going to get it? Because I can make a case for Ja'Marr Chase and his numbers. He could be that guy.
Let me look. I have a feeling this is probably going to favor running backs over receivers for this. Oh, well, as I look, Justin Jefferson and Cooper Kupp won it previous to McCaffrey, and then it was Henry.
Running
Michael
backs
Thomas.
Are just disrespected at all turns, aren't they?
They are.
But
they don't
get money. That's basically a non-quarterback award. Every now and then, like Mahomes won it in 2018, but more times than not, it is a position player that's receiver running back, knowing that MVP almost always will go to quarterback. So that's kind of the alternative to that they already have in place.
And I don't like that either, Sean. I don't.
And no one really talks about Offensive Player of the Year. It is it's not like it's on even footing with MVP. It is very much secondary.
I'd probably give the Offensive Player of the Year to Joe Burrow. Just in my line of thinking, to acknowledge
he'll probably get Comeback Player of the Year. So
all right.
He'll find a way to get him something.
Maybe Defensive Player of the Year.
Boy, that's hard. I mean, there's so many. Thanks, Dave, for the call. That was an interesting take. One more take before we get a break, because he's waited also. Dennis joins us on line 5. Dennis, thank you for your patience. What's going on?
Hey, Bob, did I hear you singing before?
Yeah, you did, Dennis.
That was on tape. I'm not singing. I sing in the shower. I don't drink beer in the shower, but I will sing in the shower. Or maybe I should drink beer and sing in the shower.
Yeah, you could do it all. I thought I heard you singing. A couple words.
Yeah, he broke off some Billy Joel, Dennis.
Yeah, I don't know what just...
Rod Stewart's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
He does Elvis Presley, too.
Yeah, that's my go-to, but I'm not going to do it. I hope you didn't call for that request. What else is going on?
No, here's the thing. Hey, Bob. the Steelers. They look terrible the last three games. I don't see any, I got my notes written down here. No confidence, deflated, finished. They're not hungry. Tomlin, he don't care. He's making $16 million a year. It starts at the top. Rooney is filling that stadium. He's not aggressive enough. So everybody's content there. I don't see any need for they just can't get it going.
Well, that's an interesting take about the word content, because I don't think Art Rooney is content. He made it pretty clear that the expectation is to not only get in but win playoff games this year. But then we'll see what happens if that doesn't come to fruition, you know? Dennis, thank you, though. We're up again.
Hey, Bob.
Yes.
I see other owners on the sidelines.
That doesn't mean anything. What does that mean? I have less respect for those guys. They want...
You want Art to be on the sideline?
No.
I mean, on occasion, to shake it up a little bit.
Jones on the sidelines, and back in the day when Dan Taylor or Snyder.
Dan Snyder.
Yeah, I mean, those guys, just give me a break with that. They want the attention. This is the problem.
You know how you own a team, Pop? You do what Ron Burkle and Mario Lemieux did.
Right.
You have somebody who knows hockey. Is the face of it. And then you have somebody under them, David Morehouse, would basically carry out the day-to-day. Right. And you know what Ron Burkle did? He walked around and he was a filthy rich guy who said, you know what? I want to win. I trust all you people. I have a lot of money. What do you need to win? Okay, sounds good. I'm going to go leave with a beautiful woman. I'll see you later.
And boy, did he do that a lot.
Yes. That's the joys of being an owner.
This is what, in my opinion, Bob Nutting has to do. Say, I want to win. I'm hiring you to do it. My budget will increase because I am a billionaire and I want to win. And even, you know, I looked at the revenues. I'm not sure how accurate some of the SpotTrack stuff is, Jason. Every year they're making a lot of money. Even if they don't win, even if they don't spend. But if you do spend, you still will make money with the ancillary income that they get from all over. So,
well, Bob, I mean, we saw this summer when they were good, how much of a story did they become? That place was filled. You know,
but that's all the more reason to win.
I know. I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying that, like, we have very recent evidence of what happens when this team is good.
Okay, let me throw a far. This is a question down the road, but I know what the answer is already. But I want to make when Paul Skeens, the money that he, let's say this success that he has continues, and he's a Cy Young winner, maybe multiple. Who knows? Or at least in the conversation, what will be the price tag given what we've seen? And tell me why they couldn't afford to keep him. And I say this, again, from my perspective, and when you're a billionaire owner, you have choices to make. And if you're in this game, typically most of the people who are in this game are people who've done well in their lives and want to competitively win. That draws them to sports. We've seen it with Stan Kroenke. He doesn't need to do all this, but he owns everything. All the guys, you look at the Pegulas. Pegulas made a ton of money, right? They decide they're going to buy the Bills and the Sabres.
Yeah.
And they're trying to win, you know, not successfully in one case, but successfully in the other. They know what it takes to. Why can't you do that? Why is it an automatic no?
Pegula also put $100 million plus into Penn State hockey
and got that
from off the ground entirely.
Yeah. Well, all right. I'm going to preface this by saying this is not an endorsement. People tend to take it that way if I try to explain or answer a question. With Paul Skeens, I mean, he's going to make upwards of $60 million when he's a free agent. And he's going to get a lot of years
on that contract. And they can afford
that.
Would you not agree? They could afford that if they wanted to.
No, I don't. I don't think they could, Bob. I mean, their payroll has maxed out at $100 million.
That's their choice.
I mean, within reason. I don't think they're sitting on, you know, an extra $100 million every year.
But as an owner, he can. If he wants to put his own money, he can do things.
Sure. But I mean, again, this is something that I'm there's a perception that Bob Nutting has like $1 billion in his wallet. Like it's tied up in other holdings. It's not liquid cash that he can just say, I want to go spend this. It's money readily available in my bank account.
If he wanted to sell the franchise, his investment in it has not only quadrupled.
Oh, I agree with you.
So that's all money that he could utilize.
I'm not defending the payroll thing and what they've done. So please, nobody interpret
it
that way.
No, I'm not. I'm just asking, why can't the answer be yes, we're going to sign Paul Skeens?
Yeah, because I think it's an absurd amount of money. I think it's an unfair system financially. Now, I'm not saying why you can't maximize the years that you have him by spending more. The Pirates should do that. I'm not saying they shouldn't. But he's going to become a free agent, and the Pirates are not set up the same way other teams are. Like, you know, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Cubs, the Dodgers, they all have so many more millions flowing in through their own TV deals.
I understand
that. The Pirates have a relatively weak
TV. You can include Arizona in that, too.
Yeah, like they're financially set up differently. Their owners are set up differently. People want to rip on Bob Nutting, and I understand it, and I'm not totally defending it, but they are different people. Like Dodgers ownership and Bob Nutting, they are in the world of finances, they are worth different amounts of money. But you also have, is this a smart investment? Are we going to be able to, if we spend all this money, obviously you're not going to do it just to do it. You're going to do it because you can put a team around him and it's going to be a worthwhile investment. And the answer to that second question is no. They're not going to put the team around Bob that would support or would put the team around Paul that would justify $60 million on one player. So you just don't do it.
The question I have is why not? Winning begets money. More money begets you. You can make money by winning.
I know, but are you going to get a return on investment for spending $60 million on one player?
And how much money do they make every year with all the income that they get from all baseball related?
I don't know off the top of my head.
But I bet you it's a lot. And
I understand.
It doesn't reflect itself in their payroll. That's what bothers me.
Right, yes. I'm not saying otherwise, Bob. I'm not saying otherwise. But if you spend $60, $70 million on one pitcher, why would you do that if you weren't going to surround him with a whole crap ton of talent and try to win it? And are they going to do that? Are they equipped to do that? No. Because of baseball system, if they try to spend like the Dodgers, they're going to lose every time. And so their game is to try to be a better version of the Cleveland Guardians.
And
be
I agree
a better
with
version of the Tampa Bay
That's
Rays.
One way to shortcut.
Have they done that? No. They've made too many mistakes, and they should be criticized for them. I'm not saying anything else. I'm just saying that running a race trying to out-Dodger the Dodgers is not the best strategical play they can
make. Well, I'm not suggesting they do it with every single player. The Dodgers
but you're
have
saying
like,
spend the money.
Yeah, I am.
That's a lot of money to spend.
Okay, well, if I took the $60 million a year for Paul Skeens as an example down the road, let's say it is that. If I add that to what they currently spend, it only takes me to where?
Yeah,
$130 million.
Yeah, their payroll is going to be about 85.
Okay,
between
you add
60
to that, it's 130, 140. That's doable, especially if you win. And
I know.
If he's a reason you get that crowd, TV rating, whatever the case may be, you can always figure out a way that it produces income on the back end. And
yeah,
that's my only question.
I respect the question, Bob, and I'm not trying to like defend the Pirates. That's not my job. I'm independent. I'm trying to. Objectively, like
I agree with you.
I think the problem is more Major League Baseball's finance.
Absolutely.
Now, why the Pirates don't maximize anything before Skeens leaves, that's a Pirates problem, and
right.
They should be criticized for it.
For right now, that has to be the way they go about it. Spend some money to surround him with some opportunity.
Or what you're doing, you know, Moneyball-wise with Spencer Horwitz that we talked about, it darn well better work.
Right, and we'll see, and it could work. And if that works, then Ben Cherington will look at as, well, that's a great trade that you made. To give up Ortiz and two others to get him. Anyway, we went way over there. Sorry about that, Seth. But hey, we're having fun on this program here. I want to tell you that the time is 1:28, and that's brought to you by Gina Giampietro of RE/MAX Select Realty. We have more coming up. 412-928-9370. We'll continue this Pirate stuff because we are to the point where it's a hot stove, but the stove is not so hot right now. Should it be? Could it be? Will it be? We'll talk about it when we continue. Seth Meyers has a headline and more right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. One:37 in the afternoon. Bob Pompiani and Jason Mackey with you as we have the final segment of the program here before the PM team takes over. And we've had a very interesting day, a lot of different topics, the last of which was Paul Skeens. How do you bring in more people? I don't know what they're going to do at this point other than what they have, Jason, which would be what in the outfield, Cruz is in center. We know that. They're going to stick to that plan, and why not? You need a bat.
Sure.
He looks like he's pretty good out there. What else?
Well, I'd expect Brian Reynolds to play most days in left field. I mean, maybe you platoon him and Spencer Horwitz at first. I think they'd like to have Horwitz play most days over there. I know his platoon splits have not been great throughout his career, but you could maybe move Reynolds to first that way. I don't expect that to happen. And then in right field, probably Jack Sawinski, unless they do something. I think they're going to give Jack an opportunity to earn some playing time. I think they're enticed by him hitting 26 home runs in 2023. I know those on the outside aren't going to feel that same way. It's not an endorsement. I hope they add. They need to add. But right now, you know, in the break, Pomp, you and I are looking at, you know, free agent outfielders right now they could bring in. It's a pretty slim list. Yeah. I can't say I feel great about any of the options. I mean, they would be baseball players you could add to a baseball team, but, you know, could come via trade, or they could have, you know, Sawinski. I wonder about Henry Davis.
That's the name what I was going to ask you. Yeah. Where is he?
I don't know. You didn't mention
his name, and I'm surprised at this point. What do they do with him? Andy Rodriguez is coming back, right?
Yeah, I mean, Andy Rodriguez is going to come back, but him and Henry, I mean, you're talking about a sub-600 OPS. I'm not guaranteeing playing time for any of those guys. Like, if I'm running the Pirates, I hope that those guys prove to me that they deserve to be on a roster, and if they do, I'll find a place for him. And it might be in right field for Henry. Like, if Joey Bart's hitting, I'm not moving him from behind the plate. I might use Henry as a backup, but Henry might have to go play right field. I don't know. He might have to DH, and you sit Kutch. I don't know. But all of that starts with him showing me that he can hit major league pitching consistently, which he hasn't done.
Yeah, that's a problem that a lot of guys have right now, consistently hitting major league pitching. And boy, Henry Davis, I thought, you know, that was a guy who was going to secure the backup, the back of the plate for 10 years and hit with power and give them a luxury that not many teams have. But so far, that hasn't worked out to be. 412-928-9370, let's squeeze in some calls before we go. Bill in Uniontown, you've been waiting. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yes. We need to win real bad against the Bengals because the Steelers went 1-1 with Cleveland and 1-1 with Baltimore. So do you think we can sweep the Cincinnati Bengals 2-0?
Well, they're not favored to do it. Thanks, Bill, for the call. I look at this game and there's a big part of me that says they're not going to be able to stop Joe Burrow.
No.
And so
I'm with you.
You know, they know they're in the playoffs. They know they're going to probably be at Houston, most likely. But other than that, I think it's important that they play well, right, Jason? I mean, you can make a case that if they play well, at least that's something to build off going into the postseason.
If they beat the Bengals, it's going to be like 48-45. I feel like
what is the over and under number on that, Seth? Do you know? Because it has to be high. I would imagine it's high. Steeler defense hasn't given you a reason to think they're going to shut him down. So
right, and I mean
48 or something like that.
We glossed over this, Bob.
Okay,
they're secondary. What are T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase going to do to this group?
Like, not to mention Mike Gesicki or Brown out of the backfield. Chase, right? Brown's been really
good.
He's been
really
good.
48.5.
Oh, I was close.
I'd take the over on that.
I would too.
Ooh.
I would. Bengals might get 48+
yeah,
on their
themselves. But, I mean, Joey Porter Jr. has struggled, and he's coming back. He's not completely healthy, I'd argue. Dante Jackson has not been good lately. Are you going to have James Pierre in coverage? Corey Trice? Like, it thins out fast, man. And, I mean, that's a discussion for another day about the defense and why the secondary isn't better. You're spending that much money on defense, but I like the Bengals to put up a lot of points.
Yesterday, Mike Tomlin, at his press conference, was asked about the bickering, the finger-pointing going on. There was a lot of that. And Deshaun Elliott was not shy about airing his grievances about what was going on. Mike Tomlin said it's bickering means they care. And they're in, do you buy that? Do you think that that's because we care?
No, I think that's a way of the coach diffusing the situation. I mean, if you cared, you wouldn't say that stuff publicly. You'd probably handle it behind closed doors. I don't know. I'm contradicting myself because I'm always in favor of athletes, people that we cover, being as transparent as possible. And I think Sean Elliott's a tremendous quote, and I'm glad he said what he did. But it certainly seemed like there were some veiled threats or comments, or we're talking about somebody without really talking about them, Pomp. Yeah. And I'm not sure that – I mean, that's not the best course of action. If you got a problem with somebody without the media, say, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah, in case you missed that, this is Mike Tomlin yesterday on that topic of finger pointing or bickering internally.
Mike, when you met last Thursday, did you address some of the kind of bickering that was going on among the defense about each other, and did you quell that kind of?
You know, I didn't do much about it, man. They bicker because they care, and we weren't playing well, and oftentimes the solutions is born out of conflict and confrontation, particularly. When you're in the business that we're in. And so we're not going to let an issue like that be a big issue. It's really not. Guys expressing truth and working to seek solutions, and sometimes emotions are involved in that. And so most of the time when you get out of those circumstances, you're able to move on as a collective, and I feel like we certainly have done that.
Well, we'll see. I mean, if there are a lot, because guys have been running wide open here, and there's a lot of people standing around. When I saw Kelce on that scramble play that Mahomes did, Jason, I'm thinking to myself, how do you let him? You know who he is. You know you should know where he is, and yet he was wide open in the back of the end zone.
Yeah, there's been a lot of miscommunications, Pomp. I mean, I think of Xavier Worthy lining up in the backfield. Yeah. That's a play that they should have been absolutely ready for, expecting, and Minka Fitzpatrick was extremely late to diagnose that and get over there. I don't know who they're talking about. I don't know if I care who they're talking about. Like, I don't want to hear you talk about anything other than as a team fixing this. It's a problem, you know, and you've got a heck of a challenge. You've got the playoffs on the horizon. Like, just get it done.
Yeah.
You know, and for as much as these guys and a lot of professional athletes want to just dismiss media and disregard them, whatever, and I get it. I understand their side of it. Like, it does nobody any good to say stuff like that.
No.
To reporters, to media.
Because all it is like throw meat out there.
Yeah.
And people are going to say, oh, what does this mean? What's he talking about? And it becomes a distraction.
It gives you things to speculate on. You know what you can't speculate on? Getting in front of a camera and saying, it's not acceptable. We've got to be better. We take ownership of it. This isn't who we want to be. We're going to talk about it and fix it this week. You know, we want better results. You want better results. That's it. End of statement. Not that hard.
No, it isn't. Mike in Moon Township joins us right now on The Fan. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, good, Mr. Pompiani. I just have a question for you. Do you think the Pitt Panther football team should drop down to the MAC conference?
Oh, gosh.
And if they do, one person said no because they put too many people in the pros. And lastly, do you think we should stick with Coach Narduzzi because he's committed to the program, not looking beyond Pitt for any other teams? That's all I have.
Well, being committed is one thing. Being successful is another. And thanks, Mike. Listen, as far as you certainly, if you're Pitt, you're not a team that's going to be able to close this gap. I just, in NIL life right now, I do not see that possibly changing. Do you, Jason? I mean, to
no,
me, you've got to be one of these programs that has a whole bunch of backing that can get the kind of money that it necessary. I don't think that's going to change. And I think because of it, they're going to end up being what they are.
No, I talked about, I did a story on this when I don't know when it was, something happened with NIL, but I remember actually talking to Mike DeCourcy earlier this football season about the uniqueness of Pittsburgh as a market. He's like, think about a lot of the Southern teams and where college football is big. A lot of those places aren't pro cities. They're not driven by, you know, three professional sports teams over top of the college. They've had these teams there forever, and they're the biggest dog at the bowl. And Pitt is not that. And that's not a slight on Pitt. That's just reality. And you need to be able to have somebody function within that environment. No, that doesn't mean that Pitt's never going to win. I think they can win. I think they can be a lot better than they were before. But I don't look at Pitt in the other places like Allen Green has been and think, oh, here's an Auburn waiting to happen. You know, this
no.
they need to turn Pitt into Alabama. Like, no, that's an impractical goal to have. Pitt's not even going to be Penn State. They're two vastly different schools. But can Pitt be a better version of Pitt? Sure.
Yeah, as far as Narduzzi is concerned, I wasn't a big fan of the last extension he got because he had several years left on it. And given the fact that most of the time when we heard defenses by ADs on why you would extend a guy 10 years, 7 years, whatever it is, it's because we want to show our recruits that we're stable here. He's not going anywhere, so therefore you shouldn't either. Yeah. That is out the window right now. Because not only do coaches go, players don't have to. You just because you're in place for seven more years or whatever it is, doesn't mean that these players are going to stick with you because they won't. They have their own agendas right now. So to me, that argument is gone. There's no reason to sign a coach to a multi-year seven-year extension. No reason whatsoever. I'd go year to year, and that's the way I'd do it. I'm sorry.
And Bob, if you're a college administrator, you don't have to sit here and accept like, oh, this takes 4 years, or you have to install system, get your own people. I mean, my goodness, look at Arizona State. They're going to be playing tomorrow in a New Year's Day bowl. Hines Ward, wide receivers coach, by the way, but Kenny Dillingham, their coach, they're 3-9 last year. He went hit the transfer portal hard. I believe they're over 50% of their roster transfer kids, and they're good. Indiana did the same thing with Kurt Cignetti.
Yep.
They made the college football playoff.
Look what Deion Sanders did.
Sanders, like, you can look
even
at
SMU, although it didn't turn out well.
You're
for them.
Right. Good, yeah. Good call. SMU's in the same boat.
That's why I'm not going to give that much And this is what you end up like Neil Brown. And the last year they probably wanted to get rid of him, but they figured wait a year, it'll cost us less. Pat Narduzzi, I'm sure, has a hefty buyout.
Yeah.
These are things you can avoid now as an athletic director. Say, look, I don't need to give you 10 years, 7 years, or even 5 years. The reason is you could turn things around quickly. We used to think it took 5 years. Now it doesn't. Therefore, show me. You want more money? Good. We'll go year to year. I'll give you more money, but you got to prove it to me. So,
but I mean, that's also not Alan Green's bet. You know, he didn't cause that.
No, but he has to deal with it.
He does. I mean, what would you do? Would you bring him back?
I think I would for now because I think the buyout's so expansive. But I think in time, we'll see. The pressure should be on next year.
Sure.
You're following a 3-9 with a complete collapse. 7, and maybe it was fool's gold to believe it, but you know.
I mean, you're still 500 over the past 2 years, and that's not gonna keep you employed. I'm sorry. The standard should be higher.
So we'll see. That's one of those things we got to. All right, one more call before we go, and that would be Kevin and make it Jerry and Shayla. I'm sorry, Kevin, we may not get you in because Jerry was waiting longer, and that's the way I do it. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Hey, Bob. I just wanted to tell you and Jason both, since you're both together today, really appreciate your work on KDK, and I really appreciate Jason's columns. I've written him a few times about his columns, and he's always been nice enough to respond to me. And I just appreciate both of your works, and I just hope you continue to do it because you've covered everything today. I've appreciated listening to it. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Jerry.
I'm appreciate
sure we both
man.
Appreciate that. Now, Kevin, you do have time because Jerry was short, so Kevin in the North Hills. Go right ahead, sir.
Happy New Year's Eve, gentlemen.
You too.
Happy New Year's.
Yeah, I mean, the Steelers better care about this game on Saturday. I mean, look what Dan Campbell did with his squad. They didn't need to play all out for that game, but they found reasons to want to. Revenge against San Francisco, etc. I mean, we've lost 3 in a row. We've got to end this slide at home in front of our fans before we, you know, enter the wild card round. Don't you agree?
Go ahead, Bob.
How they play tomorrow is very important, or Saturday. They got to. I think they got to win just to have that feeling. They also have to do it impressively, and I don't know that they can do it against this team. I would think you'd hate to go into this with a losing streak that would take you to 10-7. You're going to be big underdogs on the road, and you could say what you want about Houston, but Houston still has very talented players. They've not played well. They've been hit hard with some injuries at critical positions, but playing down there is not a gimme. I don't care what people think. It won't be.
Yeah, I think they need to be cognizant of how they're playing, and I think unfortunately they've put themselves in a position where they can't just rest guys and not care about the outcome Saturday night, even if it doesn't care in the standings. I don't think you want to go into a playoff game having lost 4 in a row, getting your teeth kicked in by the Bengals. Who knows if that becomes the game the Bengals need to get into the playoffs. That would, for whatever reason, feel that much more demoralizing. I don't think Houston's a very good team, Bob. I disagree with you on that one, but I mean, neither would the Steelers be in that case losing 4. I'm not sure it matters. I need to see something out of the Steelers to even think about picking them in the first round.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough call no matter where they go. And at this point, I would choose Houston over Baltimore. I know people are going to – I've already seen it on Twitter.
Sure.
Oh, the Steelers' success against Baltimore, that's who you want. Now, I don't know if it's who you want. That's a team that's right now rising. And if you look at a lot of the metrics, you can make a case that Baltimore is a team that could win the Super Bowl this year based on how they're playing and what they have. So I know their defense isn't as good as some of these others, but they figured out ways recently. Dean Pease, baby, I keep saying.
I know. It's been among the best in the NFL since that first Steelers game.
It has
Whatever been. That jiggled loose, I don't know.
I don't know. Jason, it's been fun. Thanks.
Likewise, Pomp.
Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Man.
Always good to be with you. And I know Jason will be back on Thursday. I'll be back tomorrow, I believe. Austin Bechtold will be here. Is that
triumphantly
correct?
Returning? Yes.
Okay. We're gonna have that as Joe continues to play golf somewhere. Joe's gonna. I told Joe you should do a video or write a book about this kind of stuff because he's trying all these different golf courses. Anyway, that's gonna do it for us. We do appreciate all the people who've called. Stick around because the PM team is coming up next. Join us tonight on the Ireland Contracting Nightly Sports Call. We do it every single night of the week. That's 10:35, 7 nights a week. Always talking sports with you. And for Seth Meyers and Jason Mackey, I'm Bob Pompeiani, wishing you a very happy new year, all the best in 2025. And before I do that, I do have to tell you about Fan Weather, which is brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. 0% financing on all 2024 Chevy EV models up to 60 months through January the 3rd with credit through GMC Financial. Showers today, possible thunderstorm, high of 51, temperature tanks as the week goes on. And by game day, it's going to be a high of 24 degrees Saturday, 8 o'clock at night. Chilly conditions. The Steelers hope to warm it up a little bit by winning a game against Cincinnati and heading into the playoffs on a positive note. We'll have you covered all weekend on KDK-TV with pregame shows, everything else. That's coming up over the weekend. And one other note for you, and that would be the fan hotline. It's presented to you by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing HVAC provider for over 50 years. You can call that one to talk to Chris Muller. I don't know if Pony's in today or not. No, so it's Chris Muller. He'll be riding with you for the next several hours. For Jason Mackey and Seth Meyers, I'm Bob Pompeiani. Again, Happy New Year. All the best to you in 2025.